welcome back to yet another exciting installment of Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast. This is episode 15, and today we will be discussing India and the Indian Ocean Basin. Some key themes I would like you to keep in mind as you listen along include the Islamic and Hindu kingdoms, trade in the Indian Ocean Basin, Hindu and Islamic tradition, and influence of Indian society on people. If you have any questions, remember you can always call the Google voice line at 321-804-2794 or submit your question via email to mrjeffrion@gmail.com. India, just like Greece, Rome, and the Byzantine Empire, and China, played an influential role in shaping neighboring societies, in this case, South and Southeast Asia. The great difference between the situation in India and that of the other states was that no Indian state would develop to rival the political authority of the Tang or Roman states. Nevertheless, India's distinctive political culture and religious traditions continue to evolve and influence its neighbors. For example, Indian merchants carried Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam all to Southeast Asia. Like I said before, India played an influential role in shaping neighboring societies in South and Southeast Asia. The Guptas were a prime suspect of this, at least until 451 CE when they were overrun by the White Huns, pastoralists from Central Asia. Centralized rule would not return until roughly around the 16th century. Unification was usually hard to reach because India, at the time, was ravaged by internal conflict and frequent invasions by Turkish nomads. Brief unification in the 17th century by the scholarly Buddhist Emperor Harsha did little in the long run to change the political pattern in the north. This lack of political unity in the north made foreign incursion easy, and in 711, the Sindh was incorporated into the Umayyad Empire. Eventually, the region came under the control of the Abbasids and remained under their power until the 13th century. There were attempts of spreading Islam across India through merchants, nomads, and by force. Muhammad of Ghazni launched 17 different invasions upon India to gain riches, so during this time, there was a small amount of conversions. A more reasonable approach for the introduction of Islam would be the Islamic State in Delhi, rising up in the 13th century. From 1206 to 1526, the Delhi Sultanate would restore order back to northern India, disbanding almost all of the invasions and chaos from earlier, helping the Islamic faith spread much more smoothly across India. With the introduction of Islam, much of Indian history after the Delhi Sultanate becomes a competition between Hindus and Muslims vying for control. While remaining politically divided, the smaller Hindu kingdoms of southern India were generally spared the constant invasions that tore apart the north. The Chola kingdom from 850 to 1267 became rich from sea trade and eventually became powerful enough to extend marginal control over much of southern India. At its height, the Chola kingdom controlled Ceylon as well as most of the area from the South China Sea to the Arabian Sea. The kingdom of Vijayanagar from 1336 to 1565 dominated southern India after the collapse of the Chola kingdom. Harihara and Bukka, who were Islamic emissaries from the Emperor of the Delhi Sultanate, ironically returned to their Hindu roots and carved off their own southern kingdoms. Neither state that they established could rival the power of the early Mauryan or Gupta empires. Trade was an important part of the Indian Ocean Basin, and it linked India to other societies. Due to more reliable and sophisticated irrigation techniques, agricultural trade came into prominence, helping increase India's population. A common theme we will find is throughout world history, the more food made available to a people, the larger their population will become. Between 600 and 1500, India's population essentially doubled from 53 million people to 105 million people. This led to urban expansion. Due to the larger population, cities began to grow larger and larger. For example, the city of Delhi had become the second largest Islamic city in the world with a population of almost 400,000 people. Because of this, manufacturing production, along with agriculture, began to increase. In places such as Ceylon and other southern cities in India, they benefited tremendously from the trading boom, as sea trade became a larger part of the Indian Ocean basin. Temples began to serve as financial, social, and agricultural centers to facilitate trade throughout cities and regions. India wasn't the only one to benefit from this trade boom. Other kingdoms throughout the world also started to benefit from trade, such as the East African kingdom of Aksum, who benefited greatly from the Indian Ocean trade and eventually replaced Kush in significance. Even the caste system itself underwent a transformation as guilds became incorporated into complex structure. Trade also helped spread the caste system into southern India, making the trading boom of the Indian Ocean basin a key event that affected almost all of India. Trade wasn't the only thing to start changing in India at the time, as the post-classical era brought a drastic change to the religious landscape of India. The popularity of Buddhism and Jainism decreased dramatically, while Hinduism and late-arriving Islam came to dominate society to a greater extent than ever before. Although several powerful Indian emperors had tried to make Buddhism the primary religion of India over the centuries, it had never seriously competed with the more firmly entrenched Hinduism. The sacking of the Buddhist center of Nalanda in 1196 by Islamic forces was the beginning of the end for Buddhism in India. The expansion of Hinduism, and also its evolution, is likely due to the growth of devotional cults to the gods Vishnu and Shiva, which explains its growing popularity with the people of India over time. There were some who thought the worship of Vishnu, the Hindu preserver god, and Shiva, a god of both fertility and destruction, would bring salvation. The 9th century Shiva devotee Shankara proposed that only through disciplined logical reasoning could an individual grasp the ultimate reality of the world spirit. Ramanuja, a later Vishnu devotee, mistrusted a coldly logical attempt to understand the reality of Brahma and instead recommended a path of intense devotion in order to reach union with the deity. In its early centuries in India, Islam did not have the same appeal, mainly because it was the religion of the conquerors. Plus, leading positions in society inevitably fell to Muslims, causing even greater Hindu anger. By 1500, however, about one-fourth of India's population had converted to Islam. The classic Islamic notion of equality of all souls was very appealing to the members of the lower castes. So appealing, in fact, that syncretic faiths, such as the Bhakti movement, attempted to blend the ideas of Hinduism and Islam into one religion. This concludes today's podcast. Special thanks to Tanner and Christy for helping make this episode possible. Be sure to check out John Green's Crash Course video on Indian Ocean trade. Coming soon, in episode 16, we will be tackling the European Middle Ages, the two worlds of Christendom, Western Europe, and the Byzantine Empire. Until next time, this has been Mr. Jeffreyon's World History Podcast.